When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My Seven Chakras, episode 264.
It has taken me virtually 45 years to distill within the vessel of my scientific work the things I have experienced and wrote down at that time.
The Seven Chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jai Kumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, the show where we provide you ancient wisdom, inspiring stories, and action steps that will help you transform your life. So if you're new to our show, then I want to give you a warm welcome. Now, before we actually begin today's episode, I've got a couple of announcements to make. Firstly, over the years, many of you have reached out wanting to support our show in some way, right? So recently, I started a Patreon page for people who would like to support our movement. Visit my7chakras.com/Patreon. That's my7chakras.com/Patreon. And for those of you who don't know what Patreon is, it's a platform that allows you to donate a small amount each month to support the expenses that go into creating this podcast, which are a lot, such as podcast production, graphics, and equipment. And this way, I'm able to provide you more number of episodes, higher quality content, and life-changing advice at your fingertips. Now, to learn more, go to my7chakras.com/Patreon, and you can get started for as little as $7. Also, if you haven't already downloaded our reading list that's based on books that have been recommended on our show, then make sure you go to my7chakras.com/reading list. Once again, to access this free downloadable PDF document, visit my7chakras.com/reading list. And with that out of the way, it's now time to bring you our special guest for today, Rachel Mann. So Rachel, are you ready to inspire?
Oh, absolutely. All of my work is about inspiring people to harness their natural abundance, their authentic power, their soul force, and their spiritual sovereignty. So I am ready.
Great. So Rachel Mann is a shamanic healer and spiritual teacher whose work combines the wisdom traditions of Native American spirituality, Buddhism, shamanism, and depth psychology. She is the founder of the Great Medicine Wheel of the New Earth School of Mother Earth Mysticism and offers deep teachings from this ancient and contemporary system for how to step into your natural abundance, authentic power, soul force, and spiritual sovereignty. She's also a faculty member with Atlantic University, offering an MA in transpersonal psychology and founded by Edgar Cayce, this particular institution. She offers online and in-person courses as well, including shamanic energy medicine for healers. Now, this is not her first appearance on our show. She first joined me on episode 215, which was titled Shamanic Healing, Light Bodies, and Overcoming Trauma. So to listen to that episode first, go to my7chakras.com/215. That's my7chakras.com/215. And in case you are a regular listener, you've already listened to that episode, then let's continue on our very interesting, mystical, and engaging conversation. So thanks a lot for joining me, Rachel.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, AJ. It's very exciting to be on here again. I love the work that you do and your spirit.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Now, Rachel, it's going to be a really, really interesting conversation today, but and international too, because people join us from all over the world. But for now, what is your favorite inspirational quote these days, and how do you apply it in your day-to-day life?
Well, this is an inspirational quote that actually has had a lot of meaning for me throughout my life. Mm. It's by the great psychologist, psychotherapist Carl Jung, and it basically goes like this. It has taken me virtually 45 years to distill within the vessel of my scientific work the things I have experienced and wrote down at that time. The years when I was pursuing my inner images were the most important in my life. In them, everything essential was decided. I hit upon the stream of lava, and the heat of its fires reshaped my life. This was the primal stuff which compelled me to work upon it, and my works are a more or less successful endeavor to incorporate this incandescent matter into the contemporary picture of the world. There you go.
Mm-hmm. And how do you apply this quote in your life?
Well, you know, really, I became a healer and a spiritual teacher, really, in large part, as a result of walking through my own healing journey from symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, from having a mother who was really very troubled, probably mentally ill, and very abusive. And also, at the same time, in my academic work, I had always been very, very engaged with the question of how do human beings, respond to violence of various kinds, and then how do they survive them and recover from them. And it was kind of these two sides of myself, which in the beginning, many, many years ago, I didn't really see as being very joined together. But really, ultimately, all this inner exploration and healing combined with all this interdisciplinary study of, peace and violence studies and trauma studies in the academic world came together, mm-hmm. and they were like they really were the primal stuff, that I used to then step into becoming a shamanic healer and a spiritual teacher, and to then offering this vision of ourselves that we can really, by healing ourselves, heal the world. And that we can therefore change the world. Yeah, so that's how it's important to me.
Got it. So thanks a lot for sharing. Mm-hmm. Now, many of our listeners may have heard the term shaman in stories, in documentaries, in movies, and other forms of narrative. But from your perspective, who is a shaman?
Well, traditionally, shaman is a person in a society, in a culture, who is a medicine person. They actually might use plant medicines such as ayahuasca, but that's actually less common. A lot of medicine people actually use the natural forces of nature, and they also connect on behalf of others with various spirits and ancestors who assist in healing. Mm-hmm. The word shaman actually was coined by a man, a scholar named Mircea Eliade. He actually coined the word. He borrowed it from a Tungus-speaking people in Siberia. It was a word they used for their own medicine people. I think it may have been pronounced as something like shaman. And he used this word in a very famous book that he published. And then what happened is that the word shaman, in quotes, then got picked up by scholars of history and religious studies and anthropology and so on to have this meaning that it applies to people in these cultures who hold these roles.
Got it. So thanks a lot for sharing. It's quite fascinating how the term came about, right? I didn't quite know it, but I heard Joseph Campbell sort of pronounce it, you know, as shaman, and that sort of stuck in my head all throughout because I did read his book, The Power of the Myth, and I found it quite fascinating. And he keeps speaking about shamans and the role of archetypes in our life and the importance of dreams. And I think it's all connected, right? Because your quote was by Carl Jung, and I guess it's all interconnected.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Of course. Yeah. And, of course, Hillman has a very Jungian viewpoint. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's very steeped in Jung. So, generally, it's not considered kosher to call oneself a shaman, at least in many indigenous tribal cultures. It's more like a word that, somebody might call you that. But it does imply that you have these kinds of gifts or a particular kind of training or an ancestral inheritance that you can then help others heal.
Got it. Now, in 2007, you left your tenured position as an administrator and a faculty member of the University of Virginia to become a shamanic healer. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So what made you, make that change?
Well, I think really for a lot of my life, I had this sort of feeling that was in the, when I was a kid and in my younger years was kind of a little ill-defined, that somehow I had a spiritual task, a spiritual reason for being on the planet or incarnating in this life. I ended up by virtue of just, how good I was at school and how much I liked education, I ended up, and because of the Cold War and some synchronicities that happened, I ended up getting a bachelor's in Russian studies and a master's in Soviet studies. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately went on for a PhD in Slavic languages and literatures. And, ultimately, if I'd had a mainstream traditional academic career, I would have gotten a tenured job, teaching Russian language and literature and culture at a college or university. Instead, I got into an alternative career in the integration of digital technologies into teaching. And I was in that career for 15 years, but all the while I was I was doing a lot of therapy and including Jungian analysis, and I was, as I said, pursuing my own healing using various energy healing modalities and psychodrama and hypnotherapy. And what began to emerge in the process of that, that healing, is that I really became much more interested in, psychology and a study of spirituality and so on. Mm-hmm. And, really, and at the same time, I was having trouble with a lot of chronic pain and depression and anxiety, which is one of the reasons why I was pursuing all this healing work. And in the process, I was really getting on the ground training for ultimately how to channel heavy energies through my body, my mind, my feelings, and transmute them into light, into healing energy, and gifts and soul parts. So what basically finally happened is that I had a major healing crisis in 2006. Just a series of events came together with my job at the University of Virginia, as well as with my own health. I actually had been using a pharmaceutical drug named Klonopin to try to sleep at night, and my physician had kept upping the dose because I couldn't sleep. I still couldn't sleep, and I had gotten unwittingly basically habituated to it. And I accidentally went off of it cold turkey, and I had a major drug withdrawal. And luckily, it happened when I was in my doctor's office. So because of that, I ended up taking 4 months off of paid medical leave. Mm-hmm. And But before I did that, I had a vision that night of the night before this kind of precipitous drug withdrawal, where my cat, who had died earlier that day, came to me in spirit form, and she said, "You need to step up and do what you know you're meant to do." And the truth is despite all the healing work that I had been doing, I was physically getting sicker, and I was actually having panic attacks. And I really knew that she was right, and I knew exactly what it meant. Mm-hmm. And so I took this paid medical leave, and then I decided to just, you know, cut the cord and quit my tenured, well-salaried job, and to get training with a man named Alberto Viotto in the Four Winds Society Healing the Light Body School in the practice of shamanic energy medicine. And so I did it, you know. It was like a plunge into the unknown. And, you know, lo and behold, a lot of my symptoms of pain and panic attacks stopped. So this is actually what happened to me is not dissimilar to what many shamans around the world and many cultures report, that they come to some kind of, like, you know, they might have some kind of big health crisis, maybe even be in a coma, and the spirits come to them and say, you know, you've got to do what you know you're supposed to do, or you're going to get sicker and die younger, which is what my beloved cat Bee told me. So Bee was just like the vehicle, you know, for the spirits to really reach me so that I could hear the message. And so that's what I did, and I've never looked back. It was one of the best decisions of my life. It hasn't been altogether, you know, easy, you know, to start fresh from scratch at the age of 45, you know, and build my own work and business in the world. But I definitely am doing what I meant to do.
Got it. So thanks a lot for sharing. I mean, it's just another reminder that when the universe has a plan for you, it will do whatever it takes in order to remind you and to ensure that you're able to notice and to be able to see that path that is chosen for you that you need to now embark on. So in your case, it was the healing crisis, it was the interactions that you and the people that you came across, and it was also was your cat who in another dimension after death even came to you and said that, you know what, you need to do what you have to do. And very interestingly, you know, you experienced a healing after you took those steps and that difficult decision. Now, what are some topics that fall under shamanic studies?
Oh, what are some topics? Well, I mean, I can speak more to the topics that I myself teach.
Sure.
So I, as you shared, I founded the Great Medicine Wheel School of Mother Earth mysticism, and what I did is I integrated these several streams in my life, which included shamanism in the West and Buddhism, particularly Vipassana Buddhism, which I've also studied very deeply for really all of my adult life, and Native American spirituality. I started studying with my teacher, my Cherokee teacher, the Venerable Dani Oahu, about almost 30 years ago, and then also depth psychology. And so I call it the School of Mother Earth Mysticism because I really fundamentally think that shamanism is a mystical path. And what I mean by mysticism is this deep and profound awareness of the spirit of all that is within, through, and around all things, and that we each have an ability on a personal, individual level to connect to spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't really need any intermediaries. So, you know, one of the main vehicles for my teachings is the medicine wheel, which is this beautiful map that gives us the four basic dimensions of life, which is the body, the mind, the emotions, the soul, and the spirit. And the medicine wheel is like a map through mother life. And it's a map from, you know, where we incorporate the truth that we came to incarnate in physical form in order to have this beautiful experience, and so that our soul, on a soul level, our soul wants us to actually, you know, have certain experiences and fulfill some sort of purpose. Mm. And so we have this map where, you know, we live in the body and the physical. And so shamanism is really also about engaging fully with Mother Earth and our physical life, because we recognize that spirituality is not something that, you know, that's something other than physical life in the body, that spiritual life is about being in the body. Mm-hmm. So in these teachings, we learn how to walk in the physical and feel the presence of spirit in everything, and then to look for the signs and synchronicities, as you mentioned, in the outer world and in nature. And we also then go down into, you know, our deep self, our, which shamanism calls the lower world or a subconscious, in order to befriend our shadow.
Yes.
And to meet the wounds within us. And then we find the soul's purpose and harness our highest destiny. And then we step into our spiritual sovereignty, because ultimately shamanism is all about the fact that we have free will and we can co-create with spirit the life that we wish to dream into being in the future. So these are kind of the four basic principles of the work that I do. Mm-hmm. In my own life, and that I teach, and that is really common to shamanism as it's taught in the Western world, although the maps may be slightly different.
Got it. Yeah. So thanks a lot for sharing. Now, I mean, I love that you explained it that way, because I think deep down, each of us is familiar with that notion or that feeling that there's more to life than what we are currently experiencing, right? And that there is this journey that you need to take in life that goes beyond the familiar into the unfamiliar, into the darkness, like you said, and to befriend that. Yeah. Darkness, and that whether we're going physically to a place or whether we're going deep down within our subconscious mind, and to uncover for ourselves and bring the truths back to us, and then in the process,
right,
become a transformed human being, right?
Yeah, you've put it really, really well. You've summarized it really well, AJ.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Now, please go ahead.
No. I think that really hits the, you know, that hits it on the head. So no. You go on.
Nice. I mean, just to continue with what we were discussing, I wanted to talk a bit about the shamanic journey. What exactly is this journey? Maybe if you could touch on also what happens during this event, and where do you journey to?
Oh, yeah. Well, shamanic journeying is a very basic practice, common to shamanic traditions, particularly in the West. And I always make a distinction between Western shamanism and you know, the practices of medicine ways among native cultures, only because, I can only speak for what I know in my context, you know, in what I've learned from my teachers. And I am a woman, you know, born into Western civilization and have therefore my own, experiences in my society, in my culture. So shamanism, you know, means something to people who are looking for people like me, for instance, if they want to find somebody who's a shamanic healer. So shamanic journeying is really very foundational in Western shamanism. It is a way, essentially, to often use rattling or drumming in order to then visualize or imagine that you're going into a place. I often take my students, or I go myself, to what I call the Sacred Valley. And there in the Sacred Valley, you visualize a great tree, and you go to that great grandfather tree, and then you have an animal ally or a power animal that is going to help you journey. And that journey may be into the lower world, which, as we've said earlier, is into the subconscious, or it could be to the upper worlds, which might be referred to as the superconscious. But the lower world is really imagistically into the body of Mother Earth and down into the darkness, or to what's unseen in the darkness. So it mirrors the fact that what's in our inner self mm-hmm. is not necessarily always showing out in the light of day, or we travel to the upper worlds where we go to meet our higher self or our soul. We can go to the upper worlds to find our true purpose and our highest destiny, to, you know, meet angelic beings or our guides and, you know, our spiritual guides and teachers, all of these folks. And we can also actually journey in the middle world, but in my tradition, as I've been taught, mostly we travel to the lower world and the upper world. And what can happen as a result of journeying, as you're led by the animal, the power animal that takes you there, is that not only are you shown deep truth and wisdom about whatever it is you're journeying about, so you can set an intention like, you know, please show me what I need to know that's going to help me break through this block or this healing crisis I'm in, right? Mm-hmm. Or you journey with the intent to go to the upper world to see what your highest destiny is and to kind of pull the energy cord of that highest destiny into yourself. And so you're given wisdom. You might feel things, see things, sense things, hear things, or just know things. And it's very different for different people. And then that's actually medicine that you bring back with you from the journey. And when you work on the level of journeying, it's an incredibly powerful way to shift things inside of you. It's much quicker yeah. and more impactful than like months or years of talk therapy. So that's what a journey is.
Got it. Yeah. I love your explanation. You mentioned that we go to this sacred valley where there's a great tree and yeah. then you need an animal ally, right, who is going to go along with you as a guide to either the upper world or the lower world. Now, have you ever thought about this, you know, this sacred valley, you know, where is this? Is this a quantum field, or have you ever given any thought in regards to where this is?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not very apt to use scientific terms, although, you know, sometimes I think, oh, I should dig more deeply into that arena so that I can map this process that's so important to me and my spiritual journey to, you know, the emerging understandings in science. But, you know, from the point of view, the shamanic point of view, is that we live in a holographic, multidimensional, you know, in holographic, multidimensional multiverses. It's like, you know, all of everything is just consciousness, and consciousness seeks experience and seeks expression.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we might say that going to the sacred valley is an act of imagination, and maybe it is initially, but in the shamanic sense, what we know is that anything that we visualize then is created in form in this holographic matrix of reality. And so it is a place that actually we do go to. And in theory, if there are hundreds of thousands of people around the world doing shamanic journeys to the sacred valley, we are actually together, you know, molding and creating that world. And it becomes a dimension that we can access for personal exploration and insight and growth. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So
I mean,
I see it as...
Good. Please go ahead. This is a very interesting topic for sure.
I see it as existing both inside us. In other words, everything that's inside is outside, right? So, and of course, in the oneness of creation, there is no inside and outside. But, you know, we also, as human beings, have to have a map, you know, to find our way through this swirling, ever expanding, you know, creative matrix of reality, you know, that's always, it's like in Buddhism, it talks about forms arising and forms disappearing, you know, and it's like, you know, everything is being dreamed all at once.
Well, absolutely. And I also like the idea that you said that each and every time somebody is dreaming or imagining the sacred valley or the great tree, with our intention and with our attention, we're actually co-creating this new field, right? And who knows, maybe in the future, we might be actually able to send people on journeys. I don't know. This is just a thought, it's powerful that we are actually creating such a dimension, so to speak. And also, when you said that our consciousness seeks experience, what came to my mind was a conversation that I heard about when Joseph Campbell also said, right? He said that maybe we're not seeking the meaning of life, but what we're really seeking is the experience of being alive, right? Because, like you said, consciousness seeks experience, and not just the intellectual understanding of life, but actually to know without a shadow of a doubt what it means to be alive. So thanks a lot for sharing. Now you spoke about the sounds, the various sounds that are involved in a shamanic journey, like drumming and the rattling and maybe the chanting. They play an important role in shamanism, right? So talk to us about the sacred sound and song and how they help in the process.
Yeah, well, you know, sacred sound and song is really, really central to my practice. And in fact, in my shamanic healing practice, a very core part of that practice is singing and chanting, rattling and drumming. And this was not something I was really trained to do explicitly, or really not at all when I was studying in the Four Winds Society. It was actually something that came to me as I started my practice. Drumming, of course, is in Western shamanism is considered very important. In fact, the anthropologist turned shaman Michael Harner actually founded his whole core curriculum, what he called core shamanism, on the idea that if you go to cultures around the world who have medicine, you know, shamanic type medicine traditions, that they often use this syncopated rhythm in order to shift, shift perception, to shift yourself or to shift others into a trance state.
Yeah.
And in so doing, to then access other dimensions, right? And you can also use a rattle for the same purpose. You know, in my understanding, and then when I was studying directly with Venerable Tahani Oahu, my Cherokee teacher, in the 90s, I mean, her tradition is filled with beautiful sound and song, and I carried away from that a really deep connection to the Cherokee heart chant. And then what happened is that as I said before, as I started to do my healing work with individuals, I began to feel the impulse to sing the song to them.
Yeah.
And what it does is it opens up the vibration of the heart. So sound is vibrational. And with chanting, you know, I can do a chant like, hey, I, oh, which is always also from Venerable Tahani, which is calling up the energies of creation, these raw energies, life force, the energies of creation that then are opening up the pathways, the channels within the body, the mind, the feelings, the light garment, the light body, and beginning to help break up the heavy energies.
Right.
And then, so sound and song and is very important in shamanic practice in the West. Yeah. And I use it fully.
Yeah. Somehow I feel that, there are certain, I guess, techniques or certain practices that are used, like sound, which have a very direct effect on our healing, right? I mean, sometimes I guess visualization is difficult for some people, but when it's sound, it's a very It's a very natural way for someone to receive healing, as well as scents, right? Scents and aromas. And then you have essential oils, and people are able to experience healing that way.
Yes.
And light also, right? These days they say that they've got different types of light, and they, I guess, point the light at different chakras within your body, light healing, and that works as well.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Now, you know, in my practice, yes, I use a lot of scent, you know, white sage, which is very common among Native North Americans, and Palo Santo from a tree in the Andes of Peru. It's a very sweet incense. And light comes in the sense of that light will come in, you know, as I say the prayers over the client. I'm calling in light from the different dimensions. Yeah. So definitely light, scent, sound, song. Oh, yeah. You know, what I love about shamanic practice is you can draw all these different tools in. And I also, you know, these are things that are not just used in healing, but in ceremony.
Yes.
And, you know, in ceremony, which I do a lot of, you know, we do a lot of earth-based ceremony in my classes, you know, and, you know, we also dance. We dance in an earth wheel that we have built out of stones on the earth, an earth medicine wheel. And so between movement, you know, dancing and song and chanting and drumming and prayer, we open up this incredible container of light where all the beings from other dimensions and other worlds, you know, can interact with us and help us shift and transform our energy, and where the raw transformational energy of Mother Earth can then be called upon and pour into us even more fully and really shift things for us both individually as well as for the group and the community. Yeah. So it's all really, really important. Yeah.
Right. I like that you mentioned dance, because I was having a conversation a few weeks back with someone who does sound healing using the didgeridoo, you know, the instrument that they tend to use.
Oh,
you know, many places across the world, especially Australia. And, well, he does, you know, he does healing work with especially people in the West and people in cities, and helps them heal using sound. But when I asked him about the people, I guess the Aborigines or the native people of Australia, he mentioned that, you know, healing, the concept of healing is foreign to them, because to them, you know, the instrument is part of their life. And to them, everything, life is itself is a dance, right? And so there's no instance where they have to go and heal, because life is a dance. There are ups and downs, and there's a season for everything. And they know it intuitively, and they just let themselves be guided into this, mystical dance.
Yeah. I definitely resonate to that. I mean, you know, and yet the truth is that it calls to mind the story that a colleague of mine, who wrote a couple of books about his friendship with a Paco, or a medicine man from the Caro people in the Andes in Peru, and he said that when this man Sebastian came down from the Andes for the first time and walked in, you know, the very congested and busy city of Cusco, he walked around and he was shocked, because he said all these people are walking around like the living dead, and that if they, you know, and that they might need, you know, dozens or hundreds of soul retrievals before they could really be back in balance. So in the Andean spiritual tradition, they talk about balance, you know, and they see it as a dance between shadow and light. And, you know, so I think that definitely I can imagine, I can only imagine, because I'm not indigenous, that when human beings more commonly lived close to Mother Earth and you know, had that deep connection, that, you know, healing, you know, it wasn't so much that you needed to heal. It was like, yes, you know, the stages and cycles of life, and you move in and out. Whereas I think in the Western world, you know, in the westernized world, there's been so much damage done, you know, back through the generations, and even so much damage to the earth itself, that in fact we do have to talk about healing, because many of us are walking around, you know, the walking wounded, and or the walking dead and the walking wounded, and aren't even aware, you know, that that the wounds of their ancestors in the past are causing all this disruption in their outer life.
Right. And I love that you hit on this topic, because that was exactly my next question, which is transgenerational healing. What's the significance of it? And, you know, if you could talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, well, you know, transgenerational healing is a topic that's very close to my heart, mostly because, you know, in part because of my lifelong interest in and in, you know, why violence happens, how it happens, and how it impacts us. And because of my own healing journey, so when I went to my first energy healer back in about 1994, three or four, and she put me on her table and just started, you know, lightly, you know, kind of running her hands along the surface of her body, or maybe just lightly touching my body. And I went into this very deep trance very quickly, and I was experiencing the death of a holy warrior on a field of battle in the Middle Ages. And, you know, essentially under her guidance and with my own active imagination, I engaged with his consciousness. And, you know, he was dying in great torment for many reasons. I won't go into the story here, but and I was able to help him find peace and be released from his body. And then, you know, one of the that kind of tagged in with an emerging interest that I had in the impact of genocide on people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, human history, what I call the bloody stream of humanity. I mean, you know, the history of humanity, at least in Western civilization, I don't want to speak for indigenous cultures themselves because they have different histories. But in Western civilization, there's so much, you know, violence and blood, you know, going back really millennia. Yeah. And I understood after my, you know, that opening and connecting into the holy warrior. And then I spent a decade where many times in my own healings and meditations, I would see and experience, you know, a lot of violence. And, you know, perhaps some of it was from other lifetimes I've lived. But some of it was just collective, like, you know, what we've experienced on a collective level, and then was transmuting it. And so I came to really understand how unhealed traumas from the past, and it can even be, you know, so many generations back, it's beyond memory, right? Mm-hmm. Can in fact, you know, be impacting us in the present. And in fact, the science, this is one area of science that I've ventured into, the science of epigenetics is now saying that actually the traumas of our parents can be passed on, you know, through in utero, in the womb of the mother. And that therefore, you know, the impact of trauma and the imbalances it's created can be passed on transgenerationally. And I find this whole concept in science very, very interesting, because really in a shamanic healing, many times when I am doing a healing for a client and I'm traveling into their deep self, their lower world, you know, because they've got some kind of imbalance in the, you know, in their life. And what I find there is I find imprints of woundings from their family and even from ancestors going much further back. And sometimes even from humanity as a whole. And yet now the science is saying, yes, this can happen. Now, I don't think that they realize or they're yet willing to say that, you know, this genetic material can go back to, say, you know, our Neolithic ancestors, for instance. But at least they're beginning to recognize that it does go back one or maybe two generations. So, and I think that healing transgenerational wounds this is one of the key components of coming into balance and harmony in ourselves.
Got it. So does this happen in both ways as well? Like, for example, we talk about the trauma that is inflicted upon a collective group of people that receive the violence. And what about the other side, you know, the other group that is inflicting, you know, what some sort of a violence any karmic you know, effects over there?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call them retribution, but sure. I mean, the great MD psychiatrist Judith Lewis Herman, who wrote a wonderful book called Trauma and Recovery, a seminal work in the field of trauma, basically said the dialectic of trauma, the dialectic of violence impacts both the victim and the perpetrator. Oh, so, okay. Yes, absolutely. So when we perpetrate violence or abuse of some kind, absolutely, that has an impact in terms of the deep psyche. You know, because in truth, we can't really, really take a life. We cannot take life. Or we cannot, you know, do harm without it having some implications for us in our soul's journey and our personal journey in a particular lifetime. And what I mean by this is that if we are perpetrating harm, then we're harming ourselves first and foremost, you know?
Yeah.
And this is why, you know, in indigenous cultures, the taking of life was seen as something very serious that needed to be handled in a very sacred manner, because sometimes it's necessary to take life. For instance, when you take an animal's life or food.
Yeah.
And so absolutely absolutely in terms of transgenerational harms, if you have perpetrators in your ancestral lineages, then yes, that perpetration can then manifest in the present in insidious ways. Absolutely.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, that is really, really fascinating and informative as well. I'm sure we're going to say something?
No, that's okay. You go on.
Got it. No, I mean, there's so much of information, so much of knowledge, so much of wisdom that you've shared today, and as well as stories. What is that one action step that you'd like to recommend for someone listening to the show right now?
Oh, an action step. Well, I think the most important first action step that anybody can take is to begin to self-reflect deeply and to look at their inner self. I just think self-reflection and being willing to look into oneself to see all the goodness as well as all the weaknesses, all the strengths, all the challenges, you know, I think that's really a first step towards becoming a real human being. And what I mean by a real human being is somebody who is awake, alive, conscious, who is not walking around, you know, unconsciously, and therefore, you know, just in habitual routines and perhaps even doing harm to themselves and others, you know, in subtle or overt ways. So yeah, I think the action step is to self-reflect, be willing to look at what's inside. And when you look inside, you'll be surprised, because we often are afraid that when we look inside that we're just going to see all this like messy, awful stuff. But what I always say is that even in the most difficult material in ourselves, the light exists. There is gold to be had. Absolutely. Yeah.
So Action Tribe, to read the entire show notes for today's episode, including the inspirational quote, certain nuggets of wisdom that were shared that you may not have been able to capture right away, and the book recommendation, which is coming up soon, for all of that good stuff, go to my7chakras.com/264. That's my7chakras.com/264, which is the number of today's episode. Action Tribe, as we begin a new year, let me ask you, how would your life change if you started listening to books? Would that make you a better leader, a more conscious being, or maybe inspire you to start something new? Honestly, there's never been a better time to start listening on Audible. Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet, and now Audible members get more than ever before. Each month, they get 3 titles of their choice, 1 audiobook, 2 Audible originals, and fitness programs that they can't get anywhere else. You'll also enjoy easy audiobook exchanges, rollover credits, and an audiobook library that you can keep forever, even if you cancel. In fact, I'm currently re-listening to this amazing book called Dreams of Awakening by Charlie Morley. So if you're even mildly interested in the art of lucid dreaming and Tibetan dream yoga, then you must download this book on Audible. Get started with a 30-day trial when you go to audible.com/actiontribe or text actiontribe to 500-500 and listen for a change. Once again, go to audible.com/actiontribe or text actiontribe to 500-500. That's Audible, audible.com/actiontribe or text actiontribe to 500-500. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. This is an amazing quote by Reinhold Niebuhr. Action Tribe, here's what I found. Not everything is under our control. There are many things happening in the world right now that are not within your immediate control. And feeling that you can change everything just by yourself in a defined period of time can lead to a lot of stress and overwhelm. And you don't want that. Instead, realize that there are many things around that are within your control. Focus on taking action on those things and remember to know when to let go. And remember, no matter how hard the situation is currently, that you have the power to overcome this and come out victorious. So Rachel, talk to us about going through a major life challenge. Maybe one particular challenge that you have experienced, and how did you overcome it?
Yeah, well, yeah, so recently I invited to come stay with me for the summer a housemate, and it turned out to be very, very, very problematic. And I came to a point after a couple of months when I knew that, you know, the arrangement needed to end. But when I asked her to leave, just based upon saying, you know, I needed, you know, my house to myself for my health and for my work, you know, she refused to leave. And, so then I had to kind of, you know, become a little more forthright and to try to get her to leave, and she still refused. So as a result of this, because of the tension in the household, I decided to just, you know, leave for a month, because I gave her a month's notice, which is what the law required, and, you know, to go and stay with friends and travel. And, you know, needless to say, even though I was spending good time with friends and having some fun, it was also really hard, you know, to be out of my home for a whole month, you know, and especially, you know, not under the best of circumstances. So, you know, so what I did is I really reached for my tools. You know, I did my grounding meditations that I teach in my classes. I did prayer work. I have a mesa or a medicine bundle, and there are certain things that you can do with a mesa or medicine bundle by throwing the stones in the mesa to shift the energies. I went and danced in the earth wheel to kind of shake off, you know, my anger and frustration and stress. And you know, so in any healing crisis I have, I have so many rich and powerful tools in my medicine basket that I can use to keep myself balanced and to, you know, as I said, you know, clear or shake off, you know, heavy patterns in thought and emotions. And, you know, ultimately what happened is that she finally left, you know, in the month, after a month when I asked her to, and I was able to come home. And of course, then I stepped up to do kind of my inner reflection of what was the meaning of this, you know, what is it, how is it that I created this, you know, were my actions towards her in balance or not? And, you know, what was the lesson in this for me so that I would, you know, maybe in the future, you know, notice the red flags or something, you know, sooner, right? And so I think that really in life, you know, we go along in life, and as you said, not everything is within our control, but you know, and sometimes I think our soul orchestrates certain experiences so that we really get the point, you know, like, maybe I really don't need to have anybody living with me, you know, maybe I really need to be in my spiritual sovereignty and in my own space and in my own, you know, my own truth, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think that basically that's kind of a story of how I worked with the system and the tools that I have in my own medicine basket to get me through something that was, you know, stressful. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, that's a really, really inspiring story that you shared based off your experience. And I'm sure many of our listeners listening right now are able to relate back to a time when they came across a difficult situation. And oftentimes, and in most cases, the biggest challenges are interpersonal relationships, right? Our relationships form a major part of our life, and they can either be a cause of great happiness and fulfillment, or they can be a cause of challenge and stress and overwhelm. And actually, relationships is exactly what I'm going to speak about in my next interview today. But this is such a great topic, you know, to talk about. And Action Tribe, I hope you're enjoying today's session as much as I am. The more conversations I have and the more experiences I have, I'm finding that, you know, you can't explain spirituality. You can try, but there's nothing quite like having an experience for yourself, because to me, a spiritual experience is a very personal experience that goes beyond words. And the reason for this is that when we try to explain something, we're using our logical mind to use the right words and to paint the right picture that would, I guess, attempt to communicate the experience. However, something that's very hard to convey through words is the language of the heart. And that is what you have when you have a truly spiritual experience, right? We're connecting more with the power of the heart and less with the faculties of the mind. And no matter how small or big that experience might be, these personal encounters provide us with a deeper sense of meaning of life. And just like David Steindl Rast once put, the eyes only see light, the ears only hear sound, but a listening heart perceives meaning, right? So think about that for couple of seconds, because your heart is way more than a pumping organ. It is actually the center of the universe within yourself. And as we are learning, the universe within yourself is just a mirror image of the universe around you. And with that, we are now at the last but very important round for today, the wisdom round. So Rachel, what is the best piece of advice that you've received ever?
The best piece of advice I would say, or the best words of wisdom, are from one of my teachers, and a Deborah Ray, and a woman I go to sometimes for energy healing work. And, you know, one of the things that I've found in my healing journey is that, you know, while definitely it is true that I've healed a lot in myself, I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here doing this interview with you and doing the work that I'm doing if I hadn't healed a lot of the trauma, you know, from that, you know, that was caused by, you know, my relationship with my mother. But, you know, it is also true that it's like, you know, the spiral, the onion, you know, we're peeling away the layers of the onion. And as we do that in our journey, I see ourselves as getting more and more closer to, you know, we're getting more refined and closer to the essence. So there's actually two words of wisdom that I want to offer. So one of the things that Deborah has said to me is that, you know, it's important to remember that no matter how much we've worked on our healing and transforming our wounds, that sometimes when we get under conditions of stress, that kind of, you know, there might be some areas of vulnerability in us, you know, that are, you know, that are kind of there. It's sort of like the wound heals and it is healed over, but it's sort of like if you injure your knee, right? And then your knee heals, mm-hmm. but you find yourself kind of banging your knee, you know, over and over again, right? And that, you know, we have to have compassion for ourselves because, you know, and that each time that happens, that something gets stimulated in us, it is an opportunity to change. And the other words of wisdom come from the Cherokee teacher Black Bear, who lived 350 years ago, and who was channeled by one of my colleagues and teachers, Christopher Beaver, and one of my dear friends, Sue Wolf, is a student of Black Bear's and also teaches his shamanic system. And apparently Black Bear said, I heard him say this in an audio recording when Christopher was channeling him, that it took him something like 86 years to figure everything out, and then he died 2 years later. And I find that to be very comforting, you know, because it's like, here was this wise and powerful medicine man, you know, who had the power to actually then come through in this time, you know, in the 20th and 21st centuries, you know, through another human being. And, you know, here he was saying, you know, I didn't have it all figured out, you know, and it kind of helps let us off the hook, because I think in our society and in many, you know, many areas of the world, we're so hard on ourselves, you know, and when we're on a spiritual path, we think like, oh, you know, I should have it all figured out now, and I should be in the light all the time, or in my heart all the time. And what you said about the heart is beautiful. And the truth is that in the dance of mother life, you know, we're going to get knocked off, you know, from time to time, sometimes from things that are seemingly, at least in the physical world, beyond our control. So it's those two things that I hold on to. Yeah.
Got it. Thanks a lot for sharing. Now, if you could turn back time and spend 1 hour with any person, dead or living, who would it be?
Oh.
And this is a rapid fire round, so it could be quick.
I know. I would love, actually, to have met this Cherokee teacher, Black Bear. I've only just started in the past couple of years to become aware of him through my friend Sue that I mentioned. And I just think that it's, you know, he's amazing and his teachings are amazing. So if I could go back, I would definitely go find him.
Wonderful. Now, what is that one thing you do in the morning or in the evening before sleeping that has really improved the quality of your life?
Well, I go out with my tea. I live on a beautiful farm called Bliss Point Farm, north of Charlottesville, Virginia. And I go out with my dog and I sit on a chair with my back to the barn and looking out at a beautiful field and a mountain. And I connect with the energy of Mother Earth, and that field changes every day. Sometimes there's things that happen that are awe-inspiring. And then what I do is I relax my mind, I connect to my heart, and I just open up in my awareness, and I send my grounding cord down into the earth, and I bring Mother Love Light, emerald, what I visualize as emerald green, and rose pink love light up into my body. And it really, really sets the tone for the day, a tone of groundedness and peace. Yeah. And then, of course, I also will drink my tea.
Great.
Which wakes
now,
me
if
up.
You could. Wonderful. I love tea. You know, I love, I used to drink a lot of tea when I was in India. But these days I'm more used to coffee, and I do add a bit of turmeric actually and honey in my coffee, which I find very tasty as well as beneficial health wise. Now, if you could recommend one book for our listeners, what would it be?
One of my favorite books is by Thomas Males, and it's called Fool's Crow, Wisdom and Power. Fool's Crow was a very, very revered, wise, a holy man among the Lakota Sioux people. And Thomas Males basically made friends with him and interviewed him, spoke with him. And what he did is he distilled Fool's Crow's words into this beautiful book, which is basically like a conversation between them. And he was a very powerful healer, so he talks about his particular healing practices, the medicine, about Wankantanka, creator spirit, and his connection to that. And I recommend that book to all of my students because I think it's inspiring. Fool's Crow's life and teachings are inspiring. It connects us into an ancient wisdom tradition, indigenous wisdom tradition, and it also illuminates in a way the life ways of anyone who steps into the path of being a healer of others.
Awesome. So thanks a lot for sharing, Rachel. Action Tribe, if you would like to get this book right away from Amazon, then we've got a special link for you. All you got to do is my7chakras.com/264book. That's my7chakras.com/264book. And you'll go to the Amazon page and you can learn more about the book, Fool's Crow, Wisdom and Power, and you can order one for yourself as well. Now, the other thing is, I know that you guys love our book recommendations a lot, and many of you are learning about Audible, which is basically a company that creates audiobooks. So the same book, but you just listen to, in many cases, the author talking about that story or sharing the wisdom that is contained in the book. And Audible.com is offering Action Tribe one free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can get to check out their amazing service. And they've got hundreds and thousands of titles to choose from for your iPhone, your Android, or your Kindle. I don't think this particular book is available, Fool's Crow, Wisdom and Power, but they have many other books. To get your free audiobook today, go to my7chakras.com/freebook. Once again, that's my7chakras.com/freebook and start listening to your favorite book today. So, Rachel, thank you so much for joining me once again on this second episode. It was really great connecting with you as ever. Before you go, tell us one thing that you're grateful for and how we can find you online.
Oh, well, I'm grateful for all the love and support that I get from my friends and my family. I've needed all that support as I, you know, stepped into doing this over the past 10 years. And I'm actually grateful for the sunny sky today because we've had so much rain here in Central Virginia. So I'm grateful for those. And people can find me at rachelmannphd.com. That's rachelmannphd.com. And look out for my online course, Transform Your Healing Crisis into Gold, which will be launched on my website by the end of next week.
Awesome. So once again, thank you so much for coming on our show, talking to us about shamanism and so many other amazing topics and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, AJ. It's really been great to talk to you. It's a lot of fun and you have a lot of wisdom to share yourself. So it's been an honor. Thank you. And
awesome.
thank you, Tribe, for listening. Okay.
You're listening to My Seven Chakras. Go to mysevenchakras.com. Download your free gift, get inspired, and take action. Transform your life today.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.